Welcome to New Thinking for a New World, a Tilburg Foundation podcast. I am Alan Stoga, your host. Each week, I bring you conversations with people who think differently about the great issues that are shaping our world. Geopolitics, disruptive tech, mass migration, the changing climate, culture wars, all of it is grist for our mill. I hope you enjoy listening. I also hope you will let me know what you think and that you join the conversation at tilburgfoundation.org. And now for today's episode of New Thinking for a New World. We live in an increasingly violent and complicated world. Conflicts big and small in Africa, Europe, Asia, the Americas, mass migrations often targeted for abuse by criminals as well as by governments who don't want the migrants, cartel violence, increasingly disastrous consequences of climate change, pandemics. So much for the age of Aquarius and the end of history. If there is any good news to be had in this litany of man's inhumanity to man, it's that most of us have not yet been inured to the brutality that we constantly see on our social media feeds, in the newspapers and documentaries and elsewhere. We can still be appalled, angered, outraged. And we should be. In part, that's a tribute to the journalists who are reporting the stories. The good ones want not just to shock, but to get their readers and viewers to reflect on the complexities, good, bad, and ugly, of the world as it actually exists. Fabio Bucarelli is that kind of journalist. He is an amazing photographer and an even better storyteller, whose beat is some of the most dangerous places on earth. Welcome, Fabio, to New Thinking for a New World.
Hi, Alan. Hi, everybody.
Fabio, as I prepared for this conversation and looked at your work over the past 2 years, you've covered, among other things, the conflicts in Syria, Lebanon, South Sudan, Haiti, the West Bank, Ukraine, crazy places. You document conflicts and crises in ways that almost compel your audience to look at things they'd rather not see. What drives you? Why do you do what you do?
Thank you, Alan, for asking me this question, for hosting me. Yeah. What pushed me, there are several things that still push me. And one of the most important things is try to bring evidences about what is going on, is try to make the people getting out from their comfort zone with the storytelling and with in-depth photojournalism. And when I say in-depth, I mean a kind of journalist and photojournalist from the field that needs time to explain what is going on. It's that kind of journalist that it's not easy anymore to do in the editorial platform, the international editorial platform, because the technologies and the way the audience reading the information is going faster and faster. And to get into the story, to try to understand what is going on, to feel empathy with your subject that you are photographing, you need time. And in this way, you can produce that kind of storytelling that probably help the people to reflect about what is going on, help the people to think and to make a question about what is going on. It's not that kind of journalist that want to give you the answer about the conflict in Ukraine or Palestine, Israel or whatever, but want to make, think about it, want to make you question about what is going on.
I know a lot of your work, even in some of the most difficult photos and stories, you seem both to be trying and able to capture the dignity of your subjects, who are often in incredibly difficult circumstances, literally life and death circumstances. When you're looking through your viewfinder, how do you think about the people whose photos you are taking?
When you are on the field and making picture, I think one of the most important skill is try to feel the picture. This means to feel the people, to feel empathy with the people. And in terms of how you do it, it's like, don't go and get a picture and be interested in the picture, but be interested in the people, be interested in the situation. So take your time before getting a picture, talk with the people. Let the people understand which is your mission, why you are there, and which is the meaning of your photography. So in this way, it helped to get in-depth picture, to go in intimate situations. And as I said before, for doing this, you need time, because it's not easy, but it's not fast. So you need time. Probably this day you didn't get a picture and you need to come back the second day or even the third or the fourth day to get into the situation. You need that the people trust you and trust the way you are telling the story. So this is basically the way I try to work when I'm in the field.
You are, and it's evident in your work, a very good technical photographer and a very good journalist. When you're working, when you're in a battle, when you're in a difficult situation, how do you balance the artistic need to make a good photo, the journalist's need to tell a great story, and the human's need to be able to go home when the day ends?
Okay, this answer can take like half a day, but I try to.
But it's that balance that is the essence. It is the balance that you have to find.
Definitely. So about, let's start for the easiest things, about the artistical or like aesthetical way to get a picture. I can tell you that since I was a child, my parents bring me to see exhibition, painting exhibition from Renaissance, post-Renaissance, Impressionist, like Tiziano, Caravaggio, Raffaello. You know, in Italy, we are plenty of this kind of culture. And this helped me to understand the aesthetic way, to understand the light, to read the light. So more than going to see like photography exhibition, I was used to see painting exhibition. This, you know, along the way, something that you interiorize this way. So it's quite easy for me when I'm also on the field to build the field in the aesthetic way, but aesthetic, it's only like a tool for the message. This is the most important point. It's not about the aesthetic. It's not about that picture that do not have content, but are like sexy or modern pictures. No, we are talking about picture and the stories full of content, and you use the aesthetic way to reach a wider audience. So, the second part is how you struggle your private life with your life on the field. And this is something that is still growing. And what helped me along the last decade was starting from having like a deadline, a time for staying on the field. Like I stay on the field one month and a half maximum, and after I come back home. And this helped me to know, do not cross the line, to do not have the osmosis between two different worlds. So this is very important for me to get the separate world when I'm on the field and my private life. And also for keeping the distance and do not enter in the propaganda way to make a journalist, because when you are so too much engaged with the part or whatever, you always risk. So it also helped me to get the distance. about what is going on. And then when I come back home, I usually stay with friend of mine and people that are interested in other stuff and help me to come back softly. Like, okay, I'm back from Syria. They ask me, where did you go today? Where did you go? And say, from Syria, okay, what do you want to eat tonight? And just talking about normal life, you know. And this also helped me to switch my mind and to feel comfortable with the new realities. And also it's something that, you know, before, during the first years of my career, I was trying to give answer. Like, okay, how can I found the answer about the what is going on around the world? And now I'm coming back home and everything is fine. And I discovered that more than answer is like accept. And the Libyan war is like my left hand. The Syrian war is my right hand. The Ukraine is my leg. It's starting to be part of me. And I started to be part of what I'm living. And it's like accept this and try to fix your reality when in the reality and the time that you are spending on the field.
I want to pull on one of the threads hanging from that sentence, which is the word propaganda. And too many modern journalists seem to have decided that they ought to be advocates, that they're not just telling a story, they're trying to persuade their audience of a political position or a social issue or something. And in my judgment, it is destroying a lot of the media outlets and creating distrust. You're trying to do something different. You're trying to tell an objective story. Is that a difficult balance to sustain? Objectivity versus propaganda?
I mean, what I'm basically trying to do is to tell the story I'm living and don't take a side. But the only side I'm trying to take is like the humanitarian side, the side of the last one, the last people, the people that disappear when a war just to switch off the media attention, you know. So, for example, I've been working with children in Ukraine, children with cancer in Ukraine, or prisoner of war in Ukraine. So, yeah, this is important. And, I mean, if you work to tell the story, you are not going there because you want to justify your idea you have on the story, but you are going there to try to understand how is the story for the people that have been living, for example, 53 years under the Assad regime and 13 years on civil war. So spending time with them, have a dinner with them, talk with them, and try to communicate their struggle, their resilience, the way of living in photography.
We live in a world of technology that produces deep fakes, that produces images that don't exist in reality. And I've got to say, I've never looked at your photos and seen anything except something I trust. And there's something about how you create your images that I've literally never even thought, is that real or not? How do you as a professional journalist, as a professional photographer, think about the challenge of disinformation, of fakery? Does it affect your work?
This will, I mean, affect my work in the way of using this technology, not at all, because this is not photojournalists, but we are not even talking about it. What this basically pushed me to keep doing this work on the field, because it even more needed in the way that in a world that the fake news and the propaganda and is growing, you need to be on the field and to keep doing the this kind of journalist that needs time to help the people to do not lose totally the respect towards journalism, because this is the point, you know. Now there are a lot of people that say, how can I trust journalists? Because this is infecting, it's like a cancer for good journalism. So the only way that I can like fight is keep doing my work and my stories on the field in this way. And and you know, keep working this way along the year, you also have the credibilities about what you are telling, your story are telling. And this is also so important. And this is one of the most important skills a journalist needs. So empathy and also credibilities. But credibilities you need to experience, and, you know, you have to tell the truth. And everybody know, you know, one of my professor journalist say the aim, the meaning of journalism is looking for the truth. And in conflict zone, the truth is all it's even more difficult to find. So this makes a good journalist to do not keep satisfied from the first answer, but to keep fighting to looking for the truth. So this takes time, as I said in the beginning. So now in a time where people go on Instagram or TikTok to get the news, it's not about information, but it's about spreading ideas. It's not about information. Information and journalism means that you have to go to watch with your eyes on the field. But now what is happening, it's like the people said their things, they thought about what is going on. And in this way, it's difficult. So good journalists with time to go into intimate and deeper story, it's even more important right now.
What do War Lessons from Gaza, Rethinking Education, Peace in Ukraine and Visionary Leadership have in common? They are all themes from recent episodes of this podcast. Check out more episodes on talbergfoundation.org or on a platform of your choice.
Let's segue to some of the stories that you've been covering. You currently have an exhibit in Trento entitled Occupied Territories, Stories from Gaza, Lebanon, and the West Bank. The images are incredibly powerful. In the description, you describe your purpose in presenting them, and I quote, as a warning for those who dare to look without turning away and still find the strength to be outraged. Tell me about the exhibition and the story behind it.
I've been working in the Middle East since the beginning of my career. And in the last couple of years after October 7, I've been working a lot in Israel and West Bank. And in 2024, I covered the war in Lebanon. And in December, I went to Syria. And I also, the first time I was in Gaza was 2013 and then 2017 for the Great March of Return for the history of Nakba. And so what basically I did is just join the dot and try to tell the story in different place about the conflict that Israel is doing several countries. So it just basically joined the dog to discover the enemy, to discover the devil, because what is going on in the West Bank is basically unbelievable. Just to give some number, that the population on the Gaza Strip was a little bit more than 2 million and 1. And 5 million.4 in in all the Palestine, in 3 million.3 in the West Bank. So just consider that more than 14 million are the refugees, Palestine refugees around the world. So basically, after October 7, the situation in West Bank changed, and the settlers starting to get more filled. The water is a problem for the Palestinian territories. All the infrastructure is a problem. There are hundreds of checkpoints that are dividing the villages and dividing the communities. People struggle to work in Jerusalem to get out and in from the West Bank, and also for journalists is becoming more complicated. And in Lebanon also what happened in October, they were like a full war, bombing and shelling every day in Dahiye and all around the countries. So what I've been covering was the aftermath and the consequences of the war and the fighting and the funeral. And so the exhibition is basically about this contemporary issue, to help the people to open the eyes and trying to watch about what is going on, because it's important right now to understand what is going on, because in a few years they're gonna ask us why you were watching all of this without doing nothing. So I want the people knows and do not turn their eyes away, but be responsible. And if they do not want to do nothing, they basically are complicit about what is going on. So this is the meaning and the reason of this exhibit in Trento.
Have you talked to people, not friends or colleagues, but people who wander into this exhibit? How do they react?
I received several messages from the people that appreciated the exhibition, in term of photography and also in term about the story and the reason behind. What is funny that I also been working in Israel, because after October 7, I fly directly to Tel Aviv, and I've been working for a big publication, Zeit, the German newspaper, and Italian newspaper, and several other publications working on the Israeli side of the story, you know. And I've published in my social media my stories. As a journalist, it was also important for me to cover the consequences of October 7 in Israel. But at that point, I received a lot of, let me say, storm shit about my work in Israel. So it's also important, I think, about from a journalist point of view, to try to avoid the football team, you know, the saturation of information that bring to the people, one people against other, because the history is full of grays. It's not only black and white. So try to be journalist in my way means also to try to, if you can, to tell both sides of the stories, and to help the people to understand the history and the difficulties there are on both sides of the stories. And try to give the different kind of grace.
I find that fascinating, because in most conflict situations, you're constrained to cover only one side. I'm thinking Russia, Ukraine. It's impossible to move back and forth across those lines. In the Middle East, for the weird reasons that are unique to that space, you can move back and forth. Gaza was an exception. Journalists couldn't get into Gaza. But as you just pointed out, you can see both sides and report both sides, and too few journalists do. It goes back to that advocacy point, the propaganda point.
But also about Ukraine, Alan, I've been working on the Russian side in 2014 when the war erupted in the country. So I spent a month in Donbass, and it was in Donetsk and other places. And then I've been covering the the Ukrainian side after in the 2022 and 23rd. So also on that side, that way, it's also important to have the both side of the stories.
It gives you context.
Yeah, give context. And you know what? It's also important and pushed me in my photography is the humanitarian side and the human being behind the story. And if you are in Donbass and you are documenting the consequences of the bomb on civil infrastructure or house, or you are in Kiev documenting the Russian drone or whatever in a building, you are documenting the refugees or the civilian that received the bomb. So in the way that you are feeling and the empathy to the civilian, it's not so different, man. It looks like the same. The way you make a picture and try to get in contact with the people, it's the same in one side or the other side of the story. I've been documenting the kibbutz closed the border in Gaza, and I've been documenting in Gaza or in the West Bank the feeling of the people, the struggle of the people is not so different. So I try to focus on that, on this side of the story.
Have you ever published a photo that you regretted publishing?
Fortunately not. Because when I'm filing the picture to paper magazine, I already the picture I'm okay with. You know, I'm not sending the picture to editor that I don't like the picture, I don't want the picture to be published. Sometimes that's depend of the assignment. You can say why or the selection of the picture. You prefer some picture than another, but the meaning is the same. It's about composition or so.
And I don't mean that from a technical point of view, obviously. I mean it from a content point of view, something that was too deep, that revealed something about the subject that shouldn't have been revealed.
No, just consider that I had the privilege, if I'm not the writer, I have the privilege to work with good journalists that also are friends of mine. And I totally trust them. And we worked together on the field several times. For example, in Haiti, I went to the staff journalist for La Repubblica, and we are friends, and we trust each other. We build the story each other. We choose the picture each other. We choose the character of the story together. You know, we work together. And so you are proud of the result when you work in this way. And also, if I work for Italian paper, Il Fatto Quotidiano, I work with them since more than a decade. Also, when I was covering the COVID-19 for the Times, I was working with good journalists on the field. So I have the privilege to work with the good partners, with good journalists. And we trust each other, so that's good. I'm not sending the picture to that newspaper, and if they like the picture, they publish the picture. I don't know who's going to write the story. I don't know their point of view about the story. I don't know. I'm not doing this kind of stuff. And try to have the control about my production. That's one of the good things of being freelancer, by the way.
The bad thing is being freelance. The good thing is being freelance.
Exactly.
You just used the word trust repeatedly, and one of the missing ingredients at our time is there isn't enough trust in general and in particular in journalism. Too many people say they don't trust. They don't trust their eyes. They don't trust what they read. Presumably the antidote to that lack of trust is better journalism, not less journalism. And I'm sure that's your view because that's what you do. I have one last question. And if you don't want me to ask this, I won't ask this. You became a father recently. Beautiful baby girl. Would you want her to grow up to be a photojournalist?
I want she be happy. If being photojournalist makes her happy, I'm going to help her for sure. But if makes happy to be whatever she wants, I'm going to be happy too. I try to not push her to be, you know, for the journal because the business is just falling down. It's difficult and whatever, but I bought her like a small camera to enjoy.
Well, congratulations both on buying her the small camera and more importantly on becoming a dad. Fabio, thank you very much for this conversation, for our friendship. And most importantly, for the work you're doing, because absent great journalism, democracy dies. It's that simple.
Thank you, Alan, and thank you, everybody.
Thank you for listening to this episode of New Thinking for a New World. I'm Alan Stoga, podcast host, and I look forward to your joining our next conversation. Remember, tell us what you think at telbergfoundation.org.